Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. He gives us a hint of what might happen to those markets a few weeks down the road following the Fed's first major interest rate cut in the longest time. Ross points out lithium and uranium are perking up. President of InsideTrackTrading.com, Eric Haddock, digs deep into the coinciding 17-year cycles that appear to affect the stock markets, currencies, gold, silver, the energy market, and even earthquakes and volcanoes. Publisher of the VR newsletters at VRTrader.com, Mark Leibovit, joins us from Arizona to chat about the potential for gold and silver, with the BRICS nations eyeing a gold-backed digital currency and the impact of the recent Fed cut to interest rates. He also has a special offer for our listeners. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on X at Charts by Ross. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be with you, Jim.
Ross, how did the stock markets do this week?
Well, stock markets had an upside bias to them, finished a little weak on Friday, but overall, trend is up, and, you know, this is one of those time windows when seasonality, you'd be looking for a correction, and I guess we had our correction back in August and then another one at the 1st of September. Who knows whether we're going to have one or not. I look back and, you know, historically, if you're in a strong uptrending market or you've got an upside bias like we have right now, it's about a 50-50 chance that you'll get some kind of correction into October, and hopefully you'll find a decent low there. One of the things that I have been looking at is that, you know, it's just over a week ago now that the Fed dropped interest rates by 50 basis points, which is a catch-up to what was happening in the open market in terms of the T-bill rates and the bond market, which had been doing this for months here in terms of lower rates. But if you look back, the last four times that we've seen the first drop in rates, we've ended up with the market in 2007 and in 2001. In those examples, the market was buoyant for the next 3 to 4 weeks after the rate cut, and it was after that that things rolled over and started to head down. If we look, the other example was 1998, but that was a reaction by the Fed after the long-term capital debacle, and when LCM started and there was a real liquidity crunch. You know, everything, including the Fed and all the banks, got together to put liquidity into the system and really carry us into the Y2K phenomenon. That was different than we're seeing right now. And then the other example was in 2020 when they dropped rates. The market from there really rallied for a number of months into the first of 2021 before it really rolled over, and then COVID took hold about 2 or 3 weeks into the break. The COVID reaction was such that we had a hard break. So if we look at it where we are right now and the uptrend, what I found when I was looking back at these other examples was that you needed to see the market lose momentum, and the way that I define that is to follow a 10-day moving average And as long as it just comes down and kisses and holds on the moving average, the trend will remain in force to the upside. But once that's violated, that's the point at which you start to see things unravel. So, you know, between here and the election, in the U.S. election in the early part of November, you know, maybe there's a correction to be had. If not, you know, the market has rallied out of the last three elections, U.S. elections, pretty strongly. But other examples show a pretty choppy stretch as well. At this point, to be realistic, let's watch and see whether the trend can manage to hold up. If it doesn't, then at least on a short-term basis, watch the 10-day average and the 50-day average will be probably the first target on the downside.
What's going on in the bond market?
Bond market has had a nice pullback, and we got some good oversold readings right at the tail end of this week. Creates what I call a springboard low, where you've got your first decent oversold on the daily charts going back to, it's about 4 months now. So we probably, the lows that we've seen this week, I think should end up holding. And I see bonds still rallying up and making new highs for the year. And as we move into next year, ideally, the model that I've got shows that bonds will find a high next year and then rolled over. But for now, trend is up, and I think you want to play it from that side.
What's happening with gold and silver?
Good rally. You know, last weekend put out a piece showing that the gold market was, you know, gaining momentum slowly on the upside, managing on a weekly basis to look pretty good. But what was it? I went back and 17 examples in the last, since 2000, where we've had upside momentum like we had going into a week ago. And they all ended up with creating overbought readings on the relative strength. If you got to 75 or higher, if you got a sequential or a combo signal where you've got the countdown to 13 off a low, so you've had a good extended rally, and we got our upside exhaustion. So if we were to get two out of the four examples, that would usually produce an interim high. Well, we got that on Thursday of this week, so it looks as though gold is ready to roll over and have a big of a correction. Silver market, the ETF on silver, the SLV, has generated a 13 count on the upside. That's coming from the August low. It's been a pretty strong rally. And probability here is, 16 out of 20 times we've had a good size correction. So first close below 2 days earlier would be the catalyst for the downside. We saw that on Friday, so we should be looking for a correction here. The anomaly would be that if 16 out of 20 went down, the other four are the ones that we have to watch out for, because if this has a pause here and doesn't break and then goes back up and takes out the highs that we put in just this week, then you could get an increase in the acceleration to the upside. So, you know, ideally, you take money off the table on silver right here, and if it doesn't break and it pops to the upside, you step back in. You know, don't get married to the idea of being out and waiting for too hard a correction. If it doesn't correct, just get back on the bandwagon.
What's happening with crude?
Crude had a good rally from the low 60s up to 72, and that was just a classic in terms of a spot to go short. We picked that off the early part of this week, and Thursday, Friday, the market took a hard break. From what it looks like at this point, we should go down and take out the lows that we had at the early part of September, so that would put us into the low 60s, and I think there's a pretty good chance that's the way it's going to go. Two down days right now, probably hit too hard, maybe have a bit of a pause, but overall, the trend is down, and that recovery rally that we had to 72 was up to resistance. It was a sequential 9 sell setup, and just a classic in terms of setting up for this retest to the bottom. Now, the big area of action this week was over in the uraniums and in lithium. Those two markets at the beginning of August had downside capitulations. And then in the first week of September, they had bounced and came back down to retest those supports. They held and turned on a dime really, really nicely. And then the early part of this week, you've got people getting on the bandwagon. I shouldn't say people, organizations, the large banks, getting on the bandwagon and saying, you know, this uranium play is a place that you should be looking at, because we believe, or they believe, that uranium and the nuclear power plants are an absolute necessity as we move forward, and they're going to make sure that the capital is available for that. So these look like good double bottoms in lithium. The LIT is the ETF for that one. And uranium, I mean, there is a number of them out there, but you could do the URA or the URNJ as ETFs and grab a basket for the play.
What's happening with the U.S. and Canadian dollars?
U.S. dollar downtrend remains in motion. We've had four rallies now in the last month and a half up to the 20-day moving average, and each one of those has just put a lid on the bounce. This week was another one of those examples. So we closed off the week at around par. 101 is the resistance level, and you know, until we go up and take out that moving average, the easiest move is to the downside. There was some cyclicality that have created a low at the end of August, but the rally, as I say, has been pretty mediocre. We couldn't even get above the 20-day average. So, you know, there's not a lot of time left in terms of where that 58-day cycle would have upside bias to it. So it'd be interesting if it can't get up and do something pretty quickly here in the next week or 10 days, the easiest path may be to see a more significant move to the downside.
Ross, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on X at ChartsByRoss. Coming up, Eric Haddock next on This Week in Money.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Eric Haddock, CEO and President of InsideTrackTrading.com. He's speaking to us from Central California. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Thanks for having me back, Jim. Pleasure to be here.
Eric, can you tell us a bit about InsideTrackTrading.com?
Hey, we are a financial advisory service that bases our analysis and trading strategies and outlooks on technical and cyclical analysis. We're a subscription-based service offering anything as broad as a monthly newsletter down to a weekly update that also has intra-week alerts with it. And we have quite a few archived reports and tutorials that delve into some of the approaches that we take to the markets.
Throughout 2024, you've repeatedly discussed the 17-year cycle and projected stock market peaks in July and then in October of this year. Can you tell us about the 17-year cycle and what you see ahead?
Yeah, that is a longer-term cycle that I have discussed really the last 25 years. It was something that contributed to pinpointing the peak in early 2000, and then a second phase of a 17-year cycle came into play in late 2007. That was really the one that heightened my focus on that cycle and on the uncanny consistency that it had timing major stock market peaks and subsequent 1 to 3 year declines ranging from 20 to 50% depending on which phase of the cycle it was in. But that the peak that occurred in 2007 had come 17 years after the peak in 1990, which had come 17 years after the peak in 1973, 17 years after the peak in 56, and there was a preceding one in 1939. And you just had this very consistent cycle that when it was in that transition time frame, and that's what a lot of my work focuses on, and when I discuss the cycle progression tool and indicator that I use, it's not attempting to assess every phase within a 17-year cycle, but instead it's focusing on the transition points, the peaks and the valleys where that 17-year cycle is shifting to a new cycle. And so that 2007 peak in the stock market and the sharp sell-off into early 2009 projected a similar occurrence in 2024. And if you look at not only 2007, but a few of the preceding phases of that cycle, you even had intra-year similarities where you saw either the final ultimate high or the preceding penultimate high in July of that year, and then a subsequent high in October, which, depending on which phase the July high was, the October was either the final high or a secondary lower high. And so there were a lot of corresponding cycles and timing indicators and even technical price indicators that were telling me to look for a rally into July of this year, a sell-off into August, and then another rally into October, and seeing something relatively similar to past occurrences where you had your two most significant peaks during that 17-year cycle recurrence in July and in October of that year. And so far, 2024 has really adhered to that outlook. We saw the peaks in July. In fact, the NASDAQ 100 is still below the peak it set there. We saw the sharp sell-off into early August, which had a lot of similarities to previous phases of that cycle. And since then, the climb back up into late September, early October. And that's a cycle that, even though it started out as something that was really catching my attention in the markets, in the last, I'd say about decade, it's been very intriguing and very validating to see different scientific research come out that has cited that exact 17-year cycle as a key one in our world, in particularly in magnetic and geomagnetic and solar magnetic swings between our planet and the sun. And certainly that's something that impacts emotional, and mass psychological swings. And most recently, a couple of years ago, there was research came out that they had identified a newer kind of interim sunspot cycle that was a little longer than the normally discussed 11.2-year cycle. And it came in right at a 17-year interval. And that kind of reinforced research and analysis I had seen probably 15 years ago that had to do with the magnetic swings between Earth and the sun that reverberated on a 17-year basis. So it's not just something out of the markets, but often the markets reveal things like that even before the known fundamentals are recognized. And so we've got this swing that really times mass psychological investment and speculative ebb and flow, and it's coming back into play now in late 2024. And then if it recurs the way it has very consistently over the last century almost, you could see some pretty significant sell-offs in 2025 and possibly stretching into 2026.
You've correlated that 17-year cycle to earth disturbances like earthquakes and volcanoes. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I would start by kind of clarifying that whenever I'm doing analysis on natural events like that, I'm very focused on what I call just swarms, earthquake swarms, volcano swarms, because obviously you have significant earthquakes and volcanoes happening every year, happening on a recurring basis, month to month sometimes. And so that is more of a white noise type of factor. And I'm looking at the times throughout history when you've seen a unusual, disproportionate, much greater convergence and swarm of those earth disturbances. And what I have been talking about for a couple of years now is leading into this time frame, expecting to see an increase in particularly volcanoes over the next couple years. And it certainly goes along with that idea of the magnetic spikes within the interaction between the Earth and Sun. You can go, deep into that aspect of it, but I'm just looking at the times in history, the years, and even multi-month periods, when those cycles argue that there's a higher potential, higher probability of some of those more significant earth disturbances. And you see that a lot of times converging or corresponding to times when that mass psychological and investment speculative instability returns. So there probably is a correlation there, and on a very broad basis, it's certainly not something that I am advocating trading off of, even something like the 17-year cycle in the stock market is not something I would ever trade directly off of, but it sets a backdrop and kind of gives a foundation of expectations for a 1 to 2 year period. And I just think there's a lot of things saying that we are entering a more unstable period, both naturally and economically, over the next 12 to 24 months and probably even stretching out a little beyond that.
You also connected that 17-year cycle to interest rates in the U.S. economy. The Fed just cut their central bank rate by half a point. What do you see ahead for interest rates?
Well, that is, as you just mentioned, another validation of that 17-year cycle. Last year, towards the end of the year, I documented several related cycles. One had to do with the home affordability index, and another had to do with just real estate prices in general. And all of those things were arguing for a peak, or in the case of affordability, I guess you might call it a trough, back in late 2023. And that also corresponded to inflationary expectations. And what it kind of told me and continues to tell me, which we're seeing in the markets, it's not not a great revelation, but that you would start to see interest rates come down. And if you go back to the founding of the U.S. and you kind of map out that 17-year cycle moving forward, during 13 of the 14 occurrences of that 17-year cycle, the U.S. experienced significant recessions. And the next phase of that particular 17-year cycle comes into play in 2025 and 2026. So it even reinforces the potential for different factors that would trigger lower interest rates out on the horizon. But I had also discussed in a couple of my reports where there's a broader cycle that incorporates that one and several others that is leading me to even suspect we could see some form of a stagflation out over the next 1 to 2 years. So it certainly is a cycle that has timed a lot of different economic swings and their peaks and valleys. And I think it's something that is going to have a pretty major impact over the next 12 to 24 months.
Gold and silver are fulfilling your intra-year outlook. What is the near-term outlook for gold and silver? And how do gold and silver fit in with your long-term discussion on currency war cycles?
Gold and silver have been validating the buy signals that we had triggered earlier this year. And then in early August, silver gave a reinforcing weekly trend buy signal. And all of that was leading me to conclude that they would see a surge into September. And in the case of silver, it could even stretch into November of this year. I was more focused on price indicators and price outlooks and trends. And when silver bottomed in early August, it triggered this weekly trend signal. It's an indicator that I have and I describe in my publications. But it told me to look for silver to see a new surge back up to the May peak around 33.50 in the December silver futures contract, and potentially above that level as the primary objective from that early August signal. And so that's really one of the key things that I'm watching, although a lot of other wave and price indicator targets come in a bit higher than that 33.50. That's just the initial minimum target for this weekly trend signal. But then, as I said, there's other indicators, the synergy of which is leading me to believe we're going to see higher levels than that in silver. And so I think we could see a final rally here on an intra-year basis over the next few weeks. But I still contend that gold and silver are a key component of what you alluded to there, the 40-year cycle of currency wars that I've discussed so much over the last 10 years. And there again, when you talk about the culmination and transition of those cycles, what I described back in 2015, 2016 was how the latest 40-year cycle should go into its culmination, crescendo between 2016 and 2021, and that's when it would shift to a new cycle. But I described back then why I thought gold would see another major bull market from 2016 into 2020, late 2020, early 2021, then see a correction, and then late 2022 was when a new cycle in gold would start to take hold, and that would be at the same time that this long-term generational cycle of currency war entered a new phase, which is when I think you're going to see some major shifts in currency, particularly the dollar's role.
The U.S. dollar and currency war cycles, what do you see ahead for the greenback?
I think that the dollar is going through a major topping process, and I think that began in late 2022 at the same time that gold and silver had very consistent seven-year cycles. So did the dollar, and they correlated with some key 17-year cycles and 40-year cycles. It was all coming in to play in late 2022 and ushering in what is likely a multi-year shift in the dollar's role. And I think this time, not only is that the dollar related to other currency alternatives like precious metals and even your cryptocurrency, but I think that this time is also when the a more overt push to lessen the dollar's dominance in global currency or global foreign exchange. And you certainly have had the BRICS nations and other economic unions starting to really push that more. And so I think that's something you're going to see evolve in the coming years. And as I often kind of stress to my readers, especially when they push back and say, oh, is the dollar collapsing? No, I'm not talking about a collapse, but all it would take is a 10 to 15% shift in the dollar's use and dominance in global trade, and that could have a dramatic effect on the U.S. economy, interest rates, even inflation. So it is certainly something to be aware of and monitoring as these continued pushes towards unseating the dollar, or at least bringing other currencies into the mix in that global foreign exchange, and that will slowly weaken the dollar on both a intercurrency basis and a fiat versus hard versus digital currency type of basis.
Do the energy markets look like they've bottomed, or could there still be more downside?
My work is showing that there could still be and should still be another spike low. Ever since June, July, the outlook has been first that we would see a a decent sell-off into intermediate cycles that bottomed in September, then get a rebound from there. But I'm looking at October, November as the more likely time for a final low in crude and the energy and the products, the energy markets. So I do think that there is a good chance of another leg down and a spike below the September lows.
The BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, are talking as we speak about bringing in a currency called the unit that would be worth roughly 20 U.S. dollars, 40% backed by gold. That would be purely digital to do worldwide transactions. What are the chances of that going through?
You know, I couldn't really tell you that or answer that convincingly, but with my outlook for gold, my outlook for the dollar, it certainly is not a stretch to see something like that that really starts to shake up the global order as far as currency is concerned. And again, that just fits so perfectly with this 40-year cycle of currency war that I've discussed the last 10 years. And as I documented back in the mid-20-teens and continue to elaborate on, it is something that has timed battles between currency. Often it was between hard and paper or fiat currency for the last couple hundred years. And you can go back to not only to the founding of the U.S., but you can go back for hundreds of years before that and see this 40-year cycle just continue to impact that that ebb and flow of that conflict, that currency battle that goes on, even back to into the 1200s and 1300s. And so it is a very not only consistent but undeniable cycle that, you know, probably has a lot to do as well with lifespans and human psychology. But a 40-year cycle is something that is detailed even through the Old Testament and the Bible, so dating back a couple thousand years of history, a few thousand years. And so it's something that has been recognized throughout a lot of history. And as I said, it has really pinpointed these currency battles. And as I thought you'd see, the 5 to 6 year culmination of the last 40-year cycle and then flow into the first 5 to 6 years of this next cycle, which began in 2021, 2022, first a slow shift and then an accelerating shift away from the U.S. dollar and into both gold and digital currency. And so certainly if you had the combination of both, you've got a pretty solid competitor to the debt-backed U.S. dollar in global currency. So I think ultimately something like that, whether it's that exact attempt and currency structure or the next evolution of it, is pretty likely. And it's something that is going to have a dramatic impact, create a seismic shift in the global currency markets.
Anything else that you think we should be keeping a close eye on right now?
I think that's probably quite a bit to digest right now. Nothing isolated or individual jumps out at me. I think we've covered a good broad swath of key markets and key cycles, so it's probably a good place to wrap it up.
Where can our listeners follow you and subscribe to InsideTrackTrading.com?
The best place to at least start out is our primary website at InsideTrackTrading.com, and that's inside with the extra I in the middle, so I-N-S-I-I-D-E, TrackTrading.com. But I also have some separate websites that are concentrated or devoted to both the 40-year cycle and the 17-year cycle that I was talking about there, and they can be found at 17yearcycle.com as well as 40yearcycle.com. But I've been gathering together a lot of the archived reports and current analysis and reports on that 17yearcycle.com site just to really reinforce the recurrence of that very unique cycle. So that's the other place that your listeners can go and find out more information about what we do and what we offer.
Eric, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Thanks for having me back, Jim. My pleasure.
My guest has been Eric Haddock, CEO and president of InsideTrackTrading.com. He was speaking to us from Central California. Coming up, Mark Leibovit next on This Week in Money.
Recyclico, making lithium-ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Do we have a special offer for our listeners?
For new subscribers to VR Trader, we offer our 50% off. Go to VRTrader.com and pick a newsletter, or for any time frame or subject you like. We got several up on the screen when you get there, and enter the promo code 2022 half off. 2022 half off. And I always make the same disclaimer that I am not a financial advisor, nor do I provide financial advice. I'm a technician, market strategist, newsletter writer, and commentator.
Mark, are you concerned that the government now claims that the U.S. economy grew the GDP 3% in the second quarter after an estimate of 2.8%? Are there signs that the actual economy is doing what the government says it's doing?
Well, you know where I stand on the government reports. As a general rule, I think they're bogus, or they're influenced, and often they're revised afterwards. So, you know, show me some industry-related reports, then I will pay attention. So, you think that I'm in a conspiracy theory or something. It's not true that we do have distorted numbers. They are politically motivated. Often, as I said, revised. So I don't believe any of the numbers. So that's just where I'm coming from. We already know from the industrial production and other reports that things have been slowing for months. We were already in a recession, which they don't want to talk about. The discussion on television and the media and so forth is about the half-point interest rate cut. But we're not talking about real important topics like who was behind the assassination, for example. What's going on with the nuclear war potential with Russia over Ukraine and the Middle East, potential Marxist policies that would be initiated if Democratic candidate gets in. These are more important issues. So know, I think I'm more optimistic, you know, if that doesn't happen for a lot of reasons. We have another candidate that's more pro-business, more capitalistic. So I know this is not supposed to be a political comment, but so much depends between now and what happens in November to the future of the economy and to the country and to the West. So if we get the wrong candidate in, you know, I think that would be more reason for the stock market to plummet. In fact, we already know a lot of money, most money managers are trying to offset their risks right now, and they're buying defensive stocks like Coca-Cola or General Mills or, you know, consumer products like Clorox and all these other stocks just as a hedge. It's not talked about so much. It was just barely mentioned in the media, but a lot of managers are already hedging themselves just in case the unfortunate outcome occurs in November. So recessions generally follow periods of inflation above 5%, and we've had that. And what happened back in 1970, 74, 80, 1990, and 2008. So in periods of high inflation, and the inflation numbers are high, despite what the Federal Reserve is telling you or Jay Powell is telling you, the numbers are really higher than are being reported, and they're not really coming down. They're being, you know, it gets manipulated to make it appear that case. So when the recession hits, unfortunately, you know, that could be a big negative. So a lot depends, unfortunately, on a political outcome. I really don't mean to get it down to that, but the wrong group gets in. I think that that sends the market into a big tank. I think if we get a positive outcome with a non-Marxist candidate, then I think maybe things can turn around here, because interest rates are not so much the factor, but taxes could be lower, and a lot of other policies could be instituted, which, you know, would support it. Now, one of the reasons the stock market is up could be, you know, the market often anticipates the future, so it's probably anticipating a victory on the part of Trump, and hopefully that's the case, and my worries, you know, might not, you know, come to pass, but we still have, you know, geopolitical issues. I think Russia's Putin, for example, ordered an increase in military troops, about 180,000, about 2 weeks ago, including reserve forces. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and, you know, maybe this will change with the new administration in the U.S. as well. So we can talk a lot about politics and what could have happened if a different candidate was sitting in the White House. And the question is, what's happening in the White House right now? Who's actually running the government? Is it Jill Biden? Biden's wife is running cabinet meetings. I mean, what's going on with our country right now? You know, it's really crazy what's really going on out there. So so maybe the stock market's a leading indicator. Maybe some of the fear stocks that I mentioned, like Coca-Cola and others that institutions are buying, could be as a hedge just in case the wrong person gets elected. But, you know, we really have to think, you know, what could go wrong here in terms of the market. So the markets may tell us. If we start seeing a bit of a crash before the election, maybe the market's anticipating a more negative outcome. So what's going on, what's important to me is this: what's going on in the geopolitical, not that the Fed lowered rates to 0.5% and everybody gets, you know, extremely excited about it, because history actually says that could be a negative, you know, foretelling of a recession, and the fact that they would even want to start doing it indicates that things are really worse than they're officially telling us. But, you know, and we also have to keep in mind that there's powers that be that manipulate the market itself. You know, the press is involved with it, the government's involved, we've got the Plunge Protection Team, the Equity Stabilization Fund, we get all this stuff. You know, Japan's been manipulating and buying stocks for decades. So, you know, it happens, you probably learned from us here, I've said this numerous times. So, like, the trading the market, you just have to watch, you know, watch your steps and realize that, you know, things are getting a bit exuberant here. Now, even though I like to see a positive outcome, the AAII sentiment survey figures came out in the last week or so, and they show over 50% are bullish on the market. And, you know, generally speaking, when the bullish sentiment figures are 50% or higher, you're probably near some type of trading top. So you got to watch that anyway. We're also still in a seasonally negative period. I know September generally is a bad month, and we had a minimal shakeout here, and this market's come right back, but there's still a lot of divergences, and we still have October to deal with, and of course the election, which I keep talking about. So, you know, a lot of yellow is moving on the plate here, Jim, so we're just going to have to trade it and watch it accordingly. And, you know, there's been, you know, a lot of action out there for traders like myself.
Mark, what's going on with gold?
Oh, well, it keeps pushing to new highs. You know, we're in a long-term up cycle. I was looking for about 2,700. You know, we talked about this several hundred dollars lower, and I think it got to about 2,660 or something today, getting pretty close to my first target. This is not an ultimate target, but it is one that suggests that maybe at some point we're going to get a correction. You know, it can happen in any market. We saw it happen with Bitcoin and oil and everything else. So, you know, gold's in a big uptrend, but it doesn't mean it still can't have a correction. But I think, you know, a lot depends, again, on the geopolitical stuff that I've been talking about, you know, what's really going on. You can argue that if interest rates are being lowered the way they are, that might put a damper on gold at some point. You know, generally speaking, as rates come down, that's, you know, supposedly a less inflation indicator, and maybe some buyers for gold may not be as aggressive as they would otherwise have been here. So that's a variable out there. I don't really look at the U.S. dollar as an indicator for gold. Many have, and I looked at it myself over the years, but there have been times where the dollar and gold can go in the same direction, not necessarily inversely. So that's not so much a play. I think you got to make a decision on gold, you know, what your time frame. I mean, I could see 3,500, 4,000, but that could be 2, 3, 4 years down the road. You know, who knows? If there's a crisis, maybe a lot sooner. So, you know, as a trader, we're still holding, you know, the gold stocks, some of the inverse long positions and stuff, and, you know, sort of keeping our fingers crossed, because I don't want to get caught in a big shakeout if and when it occurs. You know, when the markets come down big, you know, the baby is thrown out with the bathwater, and you'll see gold move down with stocks as well. So hopefully that doesn't happen. So you just have to get, you know, you have to make a decision, you know, what your time frame is. I suppose most people that ask about gold are in it long term anyway as a hedge. And I think if you're taking that perspective, I think cycles are up until 2030, looking at my chart. So you still have another 6 years of an up cycle. So doesn't mean you can't get shakeouts within that cycle. But I think, you know, best strategy is if you got it, just hang in there.
Now, I don't know if the BRICS who are meeting right now have decided to go to their digital currency called the unit or not, that would be digital and 40% backed by gold and then local currencies. Right now, the unit, as it's called, is worth roughly $20 U.S. Any concerns that that will suck up a lot of gold, and even if the stock market goes down, will boost gold prices?
I should have mentioned this when you asked me the question. That's actually the biggest story, and it slipped my mind here in terms of responding to you. Yes, you got the BRICS meeting coming up in Russia. It's in a few days. And I don't have the date in front of me. I think it was 6th or 7th of October, if I'm not mistaken. But that's a huge event, and that could keep gold going here into that meeting, just as a trading comment, you know, in anticipation of some more dramatic move. This is definitely one of the big bullish factors for gold. And when I talk about a cycle up until for the next 5 or 6 years, this is part and parcel, I think, to the BRICS, you know, action, their desire to, you know, create a new currency and back it by gold, as you're saying. So, yep, that's definitely should be interesting how the meeting goes, whether anything substantive comes out of it. There were just a lot of talk, but we know a lot of nations have joined it. And, you know, with good cause. I mean, look at the mismanagement of the U.S. debt, the mismanagement of the Federal Reserve, you know, the crazy speculation in the markets. You know, the overzealousness, I think, with the AI stocks. You know, a lot of nonsense here. So, you know, and then at the same time, you've got people out of work, hungry people. You've got a lot of job losses. Big companies like, you know, GM cutting back, and, you know, you run down the list. You know, a few technology companies. Some of the technology companies are starting to cut back some of their staff. So you have, you know, an unemployment situation here. So many things going on, and again, not to even get touch on the U.S. government and the Congress and the spending and the debt situation we have, which ultimately is going to blow up in some way. We just don't know how and when it's going to happen unless it's straightened out. So the BRICS have a lot to, you know, a lot of ammunition on their side, and I think ultimately they're going to prevail. And unfortunately, that probably means the dollar will eventually go the way of the dodo. Doesn't mean it can't go higher first, but we're in trouble.
Are you worried the U.S. government is so deep in debt that one day they're just going to wake up and say, for all you millionaires and billionaires in the U.S., and you have a lot of them, we're just going to take half or three quarters of what you have. You can get by on $100 million. You don't need a trillion or a billion.
Well, if the Marxists take over the country, anything is possible. There's talk about taxing unrealized profits. So, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but there's this really crazy proposals out there if the wrong people are in charge. And they could say, well, you bought a stock and it's up 50%, even though you haven't sold it, we're still going to tax you. We keep talking using the term Marxist, but Karl Marx had a lot of influence on a lot of people. Unfortunately, it doesn't work out. We already saw the Soviet Union collapse using the Marxist theory in other places, Venezuela and so forth. So for some reason, history is not a guide to the people that believe in that strategy of controlling everything and unilateral control over everybody and their money and their lives. So how many times in history does this have to keep happening until people wake up? We have a lot of brainwashed people, unfortunately, many from the unfortunately coming out of the universities in this country and around the world that are being brainwashed, and they don't have the smarts to just open a textbook and read history and see what really happens under these type of administrations. So it really is mental illness on a certain level. It really is unbelievable.
What's going on the crypto front?
Bitcoin's holding up okay. It's still off its highs. I'm just watching the chart. We're keeping a position in the Bitcoin and the Ethereum and the XRP and stuff like that. In fact, there's some talk that the BRICS may utilize the XRP in their future plans. This is just a rumor. Darn things only trading like 60 cents a coin, but apparently they're still in some dispute with the SEC. Ripple, which is the parent company, has prevailed up to this point. So there's some loosey-goosey stuff going on there with the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, but it seems like the XRP is gaining a big following. And in fact, it was even mentioned tied to BRICS. I thought that was an interesting connection. So they take upon XRP as their token coin versus Bitcoin. Assuming something like that happens, that could really send it up quite a bit, I think. So it'll be interesting to see if it's really going to happen and what the outcome could be. But the future is there.
Mark, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Jim. Talk to you next week.
My guest has been Mark Leibovitz, editor and publisher of the Leibovitz VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Eric Haddock, and Mark Leibovitz. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or for our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. I'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.